This is Gavin Jackson, and before we start, I want to say thank you to everyone who contributed to the ETV Endowment on Giving Tuesday. If you're a new member, welcome. And if you gave in addition to your current support, thank you, thank you. Your contribution helps us keep quality programming on the airwaves in South Carolina, and lets us keep you and so many others informed and educated. Thank you. Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we'll be doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 6, 2020 from my home studio in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast brings you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. In this episode, I take you to a free mobile testing site in the hamlet of Society Hill in the PD, recap the findings of a recent survey of South Carolina businesses, we take a look at how broadband expansion is gaining traction in the state, some news on the pending recession, and finally, DHEC's new testing strategy. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169. That can be anything from what you're doing on a daily basis to how you're changing, to if you're going out to eat, or if your job has returned, or if you're concerned about things reopening too quickly. Again, call us at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 remains active in the state, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 305 deaths out of 6,936 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of May 6 at 4 p.m. Governor Henry McMaster opened up a press conference Wednesday with an announcement, not reopening more businesses, which could come this week, but an announcement on the state's fight against COVID-19.
As you know, when this virus hit, the virus was chasing us, but now we are turning the tables and we are chasing the virus. And we have a plan of testing, of contact tracing and testing that is superior. And we know that it will be effective. It is statewide. It is comprehensive. It is smart, and it will work. It has many components. There's a lot of collaboration and cooperation that has gone into this.
Starting next week, DHEC will begin a phased testing approach to include approximately 40,000 residents and staff members at the 194 nursing homes in the state. The first phase will begin May 11th with approximately 15,000 residents and staff at 74 facilities. These facilities were identified based on risk, the majority of which volunteered to be tested in Phase 1. The statewide testing of the 194 facilities is anticipated to be complete by the end of May. Dr. Joan Duvey, the state's new Director of Public Health, made her press conference debut Wednesday and outlined the agency's testing plan.
In order to begin the safe transition back to our day-to-day quality of life and vibrant economy, South Carolina will need to increase per capita testing to allow for more precise public health interventions that will help reactivate our economy. To assist in this effort, the federal government has committed to provide DHEC with enough swabs and testing supplies to test 2% of South Carolina's population during the months of May and June. Through our testing plan, our goal is to test 2% of the population, or 110,000 South Carolinians per month. Specifically, our plan focuses on four key testing areas: universal testing of nursing home residents and staff, expanding testing in under-resourced minority and rural communities, conducting mass testing in urban areas, and finding additional testing sites.
Duvey said they are going to create an army of 1,000 contact tracers, which has already jumped to 230, in order to create a rapid response that can trace how a person became infected and who they've been in contact with.
If we hired 780 additional contact tracers now, we wouldn't really have work for them to do, but we want to have them in our back pocket. So once these testing initiatives get rolled out and we start testing, we start getting increased numbers of positive individuals, like the governor said, we will have those contact tracers available to jump in and augment our contact tracing workforce.
I have more on DHEC's approach to testing in rural, minority, and underserved communities in a moment. In a preview of things to come, the University of South Carolina announced its plan to resume in-person instruction on the Columbia campus for the fall 2020 semester beginning in mid-August. Now, highlights of the plan, which University President Bob Caslin outlined in a letter, include testing being available for all students, faculty, and staff, contact tracing, an increase of single occupancy rooms in residence halls, social distancing measures for classrooms, lecture halls, social gatherings, and sports activities, space on campus for quarantine and self-isolation, and alternative arrangements for high-risk students and employees. And just so you know, we'll have a current raiser this weekend on next week's legislative session, which might be a day long or three. Just depends on who you ask. The full Accelerate SC Task Force met Tuesday to provide an update after the subcommittees met last week. Remember, this is the governor's task force of about 30 business, medical, education, and political leaders who are tasked with looking at how to handle reopening the state and to safely get it economically back to where it was before. Ted Pitts, the president and CEO of the South Carolina Chamber of Commerce, and he presented details of a new survey of some 4,500 businesses. The vast majority of those were employers with 50 or less employees.
So if you talk about workforce, 40% of respondents have already laid off or furloughed employees. So the survey was open for a couple weeks. It closed Monday, yesterday. So 40% of the respondents had already implemented furloughs. Of those 40%, 43% said they don't expect they'll bring back all those employees within 3 months. So we talk about, folks talk about coming out of this quickly. Folks that have already furloughed employees say that in the next 3 months, 43% of them said, I don't think I'm bringing everybody back on board at that time. And you touched on the additional unemployment assistance. That runs out at the end of July. So we have an issue there, obviously, that hopefully you've got employees begging to come back, but you got employers saying, I don't plan to bring everybody back. And then 40% of the respondents have either already implemented pay cuts across the board or with executives, are either in the process of planning to do that. So in addition to the furloughs, also companies have also implemented pay cuts or adjustments for employees.
45% of those respondents also raised concerns about obtaining personal protective equipment for employees and customers. This survey was conducted between April 23rd to May 3rd, a period of time that saw the most restrictive provisions in place for some businesses.
Under the current state of kind of a slowdown, 31% of the small employers say, I just can't operate. Either I'm a retail establishment and I can't sell my goods, or I'm a small operator. I just can't operate under the current environment. And then 12% of large employers said the same thing. So a pretty big spread there.
And that current environment includes some challenges for working parents, which Jennifer Noel Fletcher, who's the Deputy Secretary of Commerce, said her group is working on addressing.
And there are some real issues facing those employees as they consider coming back to work for those who have not been at work or those who have been working. The first and the largest issue I think that we discussed was childcare. In our meeting, the governor mentioned that 1,255 childcare centers are currently closed, which represents over half of the childcare facilities. And so we really need to figure out how to get more of those open over the next few weeks. So we're going to have to do a couple of things there, and our committee is going to have to continue to work on this. The first would be to get guidance out to them so that they can feel comfortable that they've got a playbook to open with. The other thing is trying to determine why they're not opening and see what sorts of actions that we could possibly take as a committee and a state to encourage more of them to open.
There was also a lively discussion about expanding broadband in South Carolina, to which Governor Henry McMaster said it is now time to move forward on. This came after a succinct summary from Benedict College President Dr. Roslyn Clark Artis, and how the state has already fallen behind because it lacks a broadband expansion plan.
Certainly not to belabor the point on broadband, but I do think it merits amplification here. On a federal level, $20 billion was allocated in January of 2020 under the Rural Digital Opportunity Fund. The absence of a plan in the state of South Carolina forecloses our ability to access those dollars. I've been on conference calls all week with the FCC thinking about the broadband issue because the mapping that's been discussed really is not that complex or difficult. The reality is I was able to provide them today with a list of zip codes where I have students who reside in the state of South Carolina with zero access to broadband capabilities. It's not that difficult to map it out. When you mentioned a moment ago sweat equity, that's really what this requires. This is not a huge allocation of money. This is a subcommittee with the imprimatur of the governor to put some of us to work to develop a plan to tap into those federal dollars that are designated for this purpose. It doesn't have to come out of the governor's budget necessarily. It is the absence of the plan that is resulting in our not being able to access these already allocated federal dollars pre-COVID. And with the next COVID Relief Act, I was on a call this afternoon with Senator Scott. You indicated, of course, he'd been a part of this conversation along with Lindsey Graham and certainly Senator Clyburn, also with the chamber today, had a conference call on the issue of broadband. It is top of mind for everyone right now for the very reasons that Lou and others have articulated. It crosses the spectrum from education to medicine and, quite frankly, the competitive nature of the state of South Carolina. COVID or not, this has to happen for this state to reach its optimal levels of competitiveness. I'd be happy to join that committee. This is not time consuming, and the time is now to absolutely move so that we do not have to use these funds, but rather can tap into the already allocated federal dollars in the FCC under this bill. So happy to work on that and would urge our General Assembly to also make that a priority.
Let me echo that. I think it's clear now is the time for a very good plan. And I've got in this massive notebook out here, I've got a map somewhere that shows exactly where it is and where it isn't. But this is an opportunity, and now's the time. I'm delighted that we're here talking about this now, because it is time.
Now, broadband expansion is something we've heard Congressman Jim Clyburn talking about with his $85 billion plan over 5 years to connect every American. We'll continue to keep up on broadband expansion efforts as it looks to become a major byproduct of this situation. Mike Switzer with the Southcom Business Review spoke with Bruce Yandel, Dean Emeritus of the College of Business and Behavioral Science and Alumni Professor of Economics Emeritus, both at Clemson University. Switzer started off by asking Bruce about the recession we're obviously headed towards.
Mike, I don't think there's any doubt but that when people look back at this quarter or this year, they will easily identify this as a recession year, which means negative growth in GDP. I think that's what we will see for the overall year. There is a committee of economists who actually have the responsibility of defining when we have a recession with the National Bureau of Economic Research. One of the key criterion is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth, and we just got the first one. Of course, the really tough part of the first quarter of this year occurred in the last few weeks, and so we can be certain that this second quarter is really going to look dark.
Is this drilling down the same way into our state, South Carolina?
It is certainly unavoidable for any state. Hey, this is global. One of the wonderful characteristics of the state is its connection to the global economy, one of the most international economies of the 50 states. And that world has slowed down out there. And so South Carolina can't avoid the negative effects. But on a positive note, South Carolina was one of the strongest economies in the nation. In a sense, that makes it easier for the state economy to deal with those forces. But nonetheless, they're negative, they're international, and they hurt.
And we've been hearing a lot about flattening the curve with regards to this pandemic, but the economy also has its own set of curves. And there's been a discussion about a U-shaped recovery, a V-shaped recovery, which would be sharp, or maybe even a W-shaped recovery, which is what I believe Fed Chairman Powell recently said that he is expecting.
Yes, yes. When we talk about what will the shape of this recession and recovery look like, in a sense, we're drawing on memories of past recessions and recoveries, which were economic in nature, as opposed to this one, which is biological in nature. And whether it's W-shaped or X, let's throw another one in, its shape could well be determined by what another phase of the virus might do. To some extent, when we're betting on that recovery, we are betting that the virus will be controlled and people will be comfortable going back and enjoying the full force of the economy again.
And that was Mike Switzer talking with Bruce Yandel, who is also a distinguished adjunct fellow at George Mason University's Mercatus Center, which publishes his economic situation report. You've heard multiple times on here about how DHEC is upping its testing due to the racial disparities being exposed and worsened because of this virus. I went to a mobile clinic in Society Hill where close to 500 people showed up for free testing. On Tuesday morning, dozens of cars idled along the shoulder of a two-lane road in Society Hill, waiting to pull into a driveway in front of the modern, though now decrepit, St. David's Academy building. The building's name, a nod to the elite school that led to the founding of the small agrarian town back in the late 1700s. Cars snake through three towering tents that serve as intake and testing areas for patients driving through to be tested for COVID-19, whether they're symptomatic or not. Suzette McClellan, Community Systems Director for DHEC's PD region, is my escort around the sprawling mobile setup on the lawn of the academy, with army green color tents erected by the South Carolina National Guard. She explains the process.
You have different types of personal protection equipment that you have to have on. Like in this first area, it'll be like face masks and gloves. And this one, they've got on the face shields because they're doing a little more in that tent. And then when they're doing the full testing, doing the full swab sampling, getting the samples, specimen samples, then they're in full PPE, which is the gown, the mask, their face shield, and the gloves.
DHEC partnered with CARE South Carolina on its first free mobile testing site in the rural PD region as the agency ramps up testing of people in medically underserved and minority communities, which have been disproportionately affected by COVID-19. I eventually made my way to the edge of the third tent, the hot zone, to witness the testing. This is the first time I've seen it in action due to restrictions at other medical facilities. I should note that I put on my own N95 respirator before I even got out of my car and stood a safe distance away thanks to a shotgun mic and a zoom lens. And precautions in these areas are high as workers come face to face with potentially infected patients as they lean through windows of cars, sometimes standing on their tippy toes into some pickup trucks to swab the back of throats for traces of the virus. Darlington Democratic Senator Gerald Malloy was on site and got tested himself since everyone was eligible at the mass testing event. He said working with the governor's office made the free testing site a reality within a matter of days.
We have a general issue with access here in the rural areas, and this is an opportunity to start having the access so that the folks can end up getting a free test that is offered within conjunction with the delegation that helped set this up, the governor's office that was very instrumental in putting it together, DHEC, and our partner here, CARE South, who CARE South is a staple here in the community that's been doing some testing on their own. Unfortunately, they don't have enough kits to end up getting around to all the people. If you look at the showing here, you see that there is a need that is in this area.
African Americans comprise 46% of the state's first 296 COVID-19 deaths, but as a population only represent 27%. As these trends emerged, DHEC ramped up its messaging efforts to communities of color, dispatched rapid response testing machines to rural and underserved areas, and will roll out more sites like this one in the coming weeks. Hospitals, federally qualified health centers, and other providers have partnered with organizations in other parts of the state to test people with or without symptoms for free and without a doctor's referral as the state gradually moves to reopen and reassure the public.
So if there's such a hunger to end up getting the test done now, particularly with a free test, I think that this is just a start. So it's a small region. It's where they want to start. If you went to a larger area, I think it would be much larger than this. And so I think that, again, we can't ignore the fact that most of the deaths that are related to this come from African Americans, which is basically shows generational issues of poverty.
But the African American community is not the only minority group that has been historically medically disenfranchised and at risk.
I'm Chief Pete Parr of the PD Indian Tribe. My Indian name is Peter Bluehawk. We've been here since forever, but we were organized in 1976 as a tribe, and we finally got recognized as a state tribe in 2006. So it took about 40 years or so to get recognized as a tribe as an Indian in South Carolina.
The Pedee Indian Tribe, its name eponymous with the region and big and little rivers that run through it. Barr said the tribe averages about 150 active members in the region, but says there are some 5,000 not active because maybe they don't know or wish to identify as Native American, though he says racism has subsided over the years. Native Americans, however, make up just 0.5% of South Carolina's population and face substantial medical problems.
Well, our health issues for the tribe, it's just not only the tribe, but the communities. But I have CPOD, enlarged heart, black lung, high blood pressure. But you know, I'm blessed because I still can walk and still talk. But you know, these issues that I have, a lot of our members also have. And not being able to get to the doctors like they used to is hurting a lot of people. It makes people do without seeing their physician and letting them know what is going on because they don't know if it's a virus or if it's just a regular system.
Barr says while there is telehealth capabilities in the region, his people prefer face-to-face consultations with their providers, which the virus has since limited. But with free mobile testing sites like the one at Society Hill, he's optimistic about the future, despite the costs.
It's taking a toll on everybody, financially, spiritually, physically. But you know, at the end of the day, when it gets dark, there'll be another morning and the light comes up. And that's what we're looking for now. We're looking for the other light to come back up.
Nearly all the counties in the Pedee region have seen cases in the triple digits and death rates per 100,000 to match. DHEC's Director of Public Health, Dr. Joan Dewey, said those areas will be key in the agency's new testing strategy.
Our rural counties account for 9 out of the 10 top counties for infection rates per capita. DHEC and the CDC conducted a gap analysis to identify county-level gaps in COVID-19 testing in the non-institutionalized population across our state. We will use mobile testing sites, community paramedicine, and community healthcare and retail partners to increase testing capacity in these communities. We will also partner with the Governor's Office, the South Carolina Legislature, the South Carolina Hospital Association, local business, and others to set up mobile testing clinics.
DHEC will work with other partners in the coming months to host pop-up testing sites as it looks to test 2% of the state's population, which would be nearly twice as many tests that have been conducted since the beginning of the outbreak in early March. As for the results from the tests in Society Hill, folks should receive a phone call with their results by Thursday or Friday. Free screening sites are happening across the state in partnership with multiple different medical organizations. You can check with medical providers in your area to see if there are any testing locations. Now, DHEC has a list of testing sites on their webpage, but these pop-up mobile sites, like the one that will be happening in Spartanburg next week, are occurring outside of the normal collection sites listed on their webpage. And we got some more numbers from DHEC. Between April 3rd and May 4th, 851 patients and staff at 77 nursing homes and residential care facilities across the state have contracted COVID-19. Of those 851 patients and staff, 84 have died as a result, according to DHEC. The agency is prioritizing the identification of infections in nursing homes and assisted living facilities because the spread of respiratory illnesses like COVID-19 is common in these types of facilities, and the residents who live there are high risk for developing complications or death from COVID-19. Now, Heartland Health and Rehabilitation Care Center in Hanahan has the most cases at 90, and 9 people have died there. 2 other nursing homes, Greer Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center and Greenville Post Acute, have also lost 9 people. Again, at the top, we touched on how DHEC announced Wednesday its new testing plan that includes testing every nursing home resident and staff member in the state. Some good news from DHEC is that the 14-day and 28-day data that looks at testing and positive cases shows an overall and steady decline. While that's welcome news as the state is gradually reopening, the Washington Post reported this week on a sobering draft report that projects COVID-19 cases will surge to about 200,000 per day by June 1st, a staggering jump that would be accompanied by more than 3,000 deaths each day. Now, the White House and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention disavowed the report, although the slides carried the CDC's logo. The creator of the model said the numbers are unfinished projections shown to the CDC as a work in progress. Now, this comes as the President's Coronavirus Task Force is in discussions to wind down. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. How are you handling self-isolation? Have you recovered from COVID-19, or are you handling a difficult situation as a result? Feel free to share with us at 803-563-7169. This is a new normal for all of us, and we're all in it together. So leave us a message, about a one-minute-long message with your name, where you're calling from, at 803-563-7169. So, AT, do we have any new voicemails?
Oh, check this one out.
Hello, I'm Columbia Mayor Steve Benjamin.
Whoa, Mayor Benjamin. Okay, let's see what he had to say. Yeah.
Yeah, get ready for this.
I'm doing my part to stop the spread of COVID-19, and I hope that you'll join me. This virus disproportionately affects groups such as African-Americans and those who suffer from conditions such as lung disease, diabetes, and heart disease. Stay well by staying home as much as possible, taking your prescribed medications. If you must go out, avoid close contact with others and wash your hands often. Together, we can help stop the spread.
That sounded like one of those PSAs that DHEC started putting out with some elected officials. Was that a PSA?
I got you, Lil Rick Roll, I got you.
So he didn't call?
No, he didn't call. He doesn't care about you at all.
Anyway, what's new with you, AT? What's going on in your world?
What's new with me? I watched Little Women with my wife, and it's the first time that I saw Timothée Chalamet. I only had this peripheral idea of who he was.
You've only seen social media reenactments of who he is.
Yeah, and so it made me pretty nervous about the upcoming Dune movie, the duology, because I don't know if he's going to be able to carry the heft of Paul Atreides slash Muad'Dib slash, I mean, he's the chosen one, you know? Fear's the mind killer, you know what I mean?
You said a lot of things I don't know what they mean, but I'm hoping for your sake and for everyone's sake that he does carry it, because that's a big role.
I think you're going to love it, because I know you like Beetlejuice.
Who?
Which means you like sandworms. You like Beetlejuice.
What?
Sandworms. Beetlejuice.
Oh!
Oh, you got me!
You knew I was doing that, right?
No! Yes, you got me. Yes. You got me.
You know how long it's taken to get you?
It's been a while. I can't believe it. Okay, so there's sandworms.
I'll blame it on the fact that we're doing this remotely right now. But that's on you. You got to get rid of them now.
No, I'm leaving it. I'm proud of that. I love that. Really good job. Really good job. But there's sandworms in both movies.
And maybe I was so good with my deadpan because I now have a MasterClass account.
Oh, and what are you taking?
I've been taking comedy classes.
Oh yeah, from whom?
I'm just kidding. My innate comedy has come from being a child of the 90s, as we've talked about before. Hours of Roseanne, hours of The Simpsons, hours of Seinfeld.
Oh yeah, I could actually do a masterclass on 90s Nickelodeon cartoons.
I mean, we didn't have cable, so I was deprived.
Got a steel trap up here. I remember every episode of Rocco's Modern Life and Ah Real Monsters. What could you teach? What could you teach on MasterClass?
Probably Clue, the movie Clue, and how you can act all the characters. How you can do all it, because you know we didn't have cable, so all we did was rewatch movies over and over again. And so that's why we know movie lines, and that's why no one ever wants to watch movies with us, because me and my brothers, because it's like Austin Powers. I mean, I could give you a masterclass on lines from Austin Powers.
That's what we had to do back in the day before memes. We just recited movie lines at each other.
These kids these days. No idea.
They don't know how good they got it.
But yeah, I got the masterclass, so I'll be keeping up to date, because I got the buy one, get one free membership with my friend Joanna. So I got her to crack on that, and she's substituting her TV time with masterclass time. So I'll let you know how it goes. I haven't done them yet, but...
You definitely have to do cooking. Do some cooking.
Yeah. Also, I want to give another thanks to our dedicated listener, Garrett Holmes, out there in Portland, Oregon. He hooked us up a few weeks ago with delicious Kova coffee. You might remember I was saying Kova because that's how it looks, but it's Kova coffee. Mmm, Kova, that's fresh. It's
my
still
wife
fueling
just
this podcast,
good.
And you guys got some. You can find out more about their freshly roasted specialty coffee on their Instagram at COAVA Coffee and also at kovacoffee.com. Free shipping on all orders through May 15th. So can you say Mother's Day present? I'm just putting it out there.
Cup
That's
of
on
Joe.
You. Giving you an
Cup
idea.
Cup of Joe.
And thanks again for tuning into the podcast. This is our 21st episode specifically to COVID-19. So we appreciate you guys listening. And again, you can find more news daily on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers, because they're out there too, hustling every day to bring you the news. And once you get your fill of news, take a break. That's what we do. Get out there and walk, do some stretches, take a master class, watch Clue, whatever.
Total Recall.
And you can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson for the latest information and news going on in the state. I'll also let you know if the governor's holding a press conference that day, which is always carried on SCETV and South Carolina Public Radio platforms, usually around 4:30. We are here if you are a lead community as this situation continues to develop. We are in full-scale hashtag lead laugh love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Charles E. Cheese Rat, CEO.
We have Charles E. Cheese on the line, an esteemed rat.
I'm a rat. I like garbage.